This is KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California, and it's broadcast number 624, November 21st, 1983. We'll discuss for 1 minute, what happened just a year ago this evening. Judge Wood sentenced Mr. Charles Harrelson for Judge Wood was murdered, and Mr. Charles Harrelson bragged before the judge at his trial that he had helped kill John Kennedy. It was the trial of Judge Wood, who was gunned down in Texas a while back, and Charles Harrelson told him during the hearings that he had been one of the gunmen, and he drew a map of the area where Kennedy was shot in downtown Dallas, and the court literally threw him out. They said, this isn't a trial on the murder of Kennedy, it's on Judge Wood, so he's asking for a new trial right now, I understand, on some of the information that went wrong at his earlier trial. There's controversy last year when J. Peter Grace was given an appointment by Ronald Reagan for his cost control survey. We talked about that. This year he's still been working on ways to cut government expense. He's in the news a lot. And in this past year, W.R. Grace and the Howard Hughes Tool Company merged, which is a very dangerous situation. Not surprising, but that happened. I talked about Henry Kissinger and the art of staying in the public eye. That was in the Washington Post, October 20th, a year ago. And this year, he's in the public eye all of the time. Probably the most obscene thing was Dr. Strangelove, following the movie on the atomic war, speaking and trying to put your fears to rest when he literally is the Fuhrer of America, he and Fritz Kramer. If you don't do something to smoke those two people out, you'll get Henry Kissinger as president, and don't complain. You have your chances now, and you can do something about it. The chances are running out. There's less chance now than there was a year ago, and everything should be done to get rid of Henry Kissinger and expose him for what he is. Just earlier on the talk show part of this program, before World Watchers started, I had a quotation of Ralph Waldo Emerson, which I believe is a good one, and I brought in apropos of this evening and this week. He said, "The existence of evil and malignant men does not depend on themselves or on men. It indicates the virulence that remains uncured in the universe, corrupting and hurling out, and that some men are rat-like, wolf-like, pestilent rats and tigers." Out there, there are two forces. There's them, and there's us. And as long as you allow those Kissingers, those obscene, ugly fascists, to tell you that the bomb is okay, then you deserve the bomb on your head. That's all I can say. If you're fighting nuclear weapons, then you ought to fight Henry Kissinger or Daniel Graham, because they're sure putting them out there, and you're going to have to live with them. I mean, that just is true. I'm sorry. A year ago tonight, I was talking about Otto von Bolschwing and his connections to John DeLorean, to Chris Kraft, the corporation TCI, to the Sterling National Bank, to the Vatican. That was one of my favorite programs, if I could say, what is my favorite program? I think number 572 on November 22nd, 1982. It was a program where I took a lot of interconnecting links that were in the newspaper that week and brought them to the past and to the network, the Odessa network that I study so often. And it was a very creative week, and I like that program a lot. If you don't have the tape, you can get it. It's really worth having. It was a good one. Well, the good news this week was that Rebel came out, the issue of the Rebel. You can ask at your newsstands. Local people here can get it at the Thunderbird. A listener told me that she called and she asked them to order them. It's the premier issue of the Rebel, and on the cover is the swastika and a burning sign, and it says, "The Rise of the Fourth Reich, the Nazi connections on the JFK assassination." Now, the whole issue, the magazine, is very good. It's 96 pages, and it's filled with news and information. And it has the article by Mae Brussel. In fact, Larry Flint had an ad this week in the New York Times on the Rebel, and the new article on the Nazi connections to the John Kennedy assassination. And I think I like the article. I like the research. I was very happy with the way it came out. And it's hard to condense 20 years' work into 54 typewritten pages. And it's hard to make a new point. People don't want to learn something new. Carl Sandburg wrote that in the poem, The Advice to His Son. It's very hard to get a new idea across. And after 20 years of blah, blah on the Kennedy assassination, obscuring the facts, and working for 20 years, I didn't just wake up one morning and have a new idea. I collected hundreds and hundreds of books and articles and files and extracted what I wanted to say in the story, and I think I was able to do it in that many pages. It's broken down into Roman numerals, into five parts, I think that way, into categories. The first part is the Nazi war years. I wanted a table of contents like you have at a play, you know, what songs and acts and scenes, but they, for editorial reasons, didn't want it. The Nazi years, I break it chronological, 1940 to 1945. The Nazi connections of Reinhard Gehlen coming here to form the CIA, of Wild Bill Donovan of the OSS and Alan Dulles and the Vatican and their role with Adolf Hitler, John J. McCloy and the Chase Manhattan and his role during those 4 years of the war and when the war was over, J. Edgar Hoover with Interpol and with the Nazis, and then Charles Willoughby, Carl Wiedenbeck, his real name, Adolf Wiedenbeck from Heidelberg to Madrid, those men and what they were doing in 1940 to 1945 that affected us right now today. The second part is the transition from 1952. In 1952, five important things happened, and they're in the article. One, Klaus Barbie arrives in Bolivia, and that has some nice twists on who he stays with and the Nazis down there and the interconnecting links of the various corporate levels. And George de Morenschild, the man who's going to be housing and feeding and transporting Oswald, and Klaus Barbie's gang in Bolivia. The second is Eva Perón dies, Evita Perón, and the Nazi money is released from the Swiss banks. A lot of these you've heard individually on individual programs, but to get it into a composite article is difficult. The third part of 1952 is Otto Skorzeny moves from Madrid to Madrid from South America and joins both Hitler's Gehlen operation and our CIA simultaneously. And under 1952, Nikolai Malofs of the Iron Guard moves to Argentina, but he passes through Richard Nixon's office. Nixon was supposed to win the election in 1960, and when he doesn't, then the Nazis are in place to secure it for his presidency eventually and have a role in getting rid of John Kennedy. And then 1952, John J. McCloy releases the top Nazis from Germany, like Hallmar Schacht and the Krupps and the Tysons, so that they can begin rearming Germany. That's the year where the German Nazis are released. Hermann Abst, who's the head of the Opus Dei for the Vatican and runs a Vatican bank right now, they're all released from prison, and they all start operating right away. And then part three is on the election of John Kennedy versus Richard Nixon, and that segment's 1960. Well, that 1960 has to do with four organizations that were set up to kill John Kennedy or anybody else who stood in the way. The Christian Right, that's the Minutemen and the Nazis and the people that were working with Clay Shaw and Oswald and Oswald's double in New Orleans. The Permandex operation of Clay Shaw with Reinhard Gehlen and the International Nazis and the Schlumbergers and the Double Check group. The third was Robert Mayhew and with Judith Exner and Sam Giacona and John Rosselli and Mayhew and the youth organizations to Carl Boyer and the Tysons and the Krupps and the Apps and the Nazis in Germany. And fourth part is William Buckley's Young Americans for Freedom. And on the board of Young Americans for Freedom is Richard Nixon and Mr. Charles Willoughby and Robert Morris, the people that will play a role in the murder of John Kennedy or in his cover-up later. And part four is the called A Few Connections in Dallas, and it has to do with General Walter Dornberger, the Nazi war criminal, with Michael and Ruth Payne, where Lee and Marina Oswald stayed, Lee Harvey Oswald and Albert Osborne. This is to Senator John Tower and Marina Oswald. Isaac Don Levine, the rabid anti-communist with the Zeiger daughters from Argentina, the Bunge Corporation, and the Argentine connections to the Kennedy assassination, and then the book Treason for My Daily Bread with Martin Bormann and the Nazis in the assassination. And part five is the Warren Commission, and I purposely downplayed that. There's been a lot on the Warren Commission, and I didn't do a lot on it. I gave a little essence of their personality, the people, their personalities on the Warren Commission, and a few things that they did, showing the treason of Chief Justice Earl Warren, the shenanigans that he pulled, and Dr. Rudolf August Wenneker, the German who was sent to write the Warren Report. And, of course, Alan Dulles and John J. McCloy worked with the early Nazis from 1940 on up till the time John Kennedy was killed, and Gerald Ford was put there by Richard Nixon, who worked with Nikolai Maloxa and Otto von Bolschwing and the Nazis at that time. I don't have too much about Ford. There's a little bit there. I mentioned in the article, it said what Gerald Ford wrote in a book, how the first meeting of the Warren Commission, they got information that Lee Harvey Oswald worked for the FBI, that it was a top-secret meeting. And what I wrote was the part left out of Jerry Ford's book was that Oswald was an informant for the CIA and that he knew it at the time. That the first meeting of the Warren Commission, privately before they took witnesses, they knew his number was 110669 of the CIA. I've had that document about 8 years, and this is the first time it's been published. And then I said, how was that for a starter? When the Warren Commission got going. Local people can ask the Thunderbird to carry The Rebel. It will be out, distributed around the country. I don't know where, whether it's liquor stores or wherever the Hustler is sold, or the distributions and bookstores. And if they don't have it, it's new. Ask them to get it. I just finished the second article for the next Rebel, and it's about Grenada and the invasion of Grenada and the secrecy. And it has to do with the medical school in Grenada and the mental hospital that was bombed, and the link of Caspar Weinberger and Ronald Reagan to mind control programs, and why the two of them had to have absolute secrecy in the invasion for 5 days because four bombs were targeted over the mental hospital and the discrepancies in the bodies there. Of course, you can leave it to May to find something a little different in the stories, but the thing that I'm proud of is that I'm not a sensationalist. I study hard what I do. I take it seriously, and then when it's done, I hope it's done for all time. I don't have to backtrack. I've never been in a position, I've mentioned it to you before, where I had to backtrack on what I had on the air or what I wrote. I'm proud of everything I wrote, and it will hold, I hope, for all time and open the way for some of you other researchers in the future. Now, that was the good news that this last week, Rebel is out. Now for the bad news, and I have to be careful in the words I use tonight. First, I wasn't going to do this particular broadcast. I was going to do a broadcast, but it was going to be a little bit different. I had to weigh in the balance what are the chances of something happening dangerous to Larry Flynt, and I decided nothing more dangerous can happen to him, so I'm going to tell you what's happening right now. Larry Flynt called me a week ago Saturday night and told me he had this wonderful idea. He was going to get an airplane. A 727 was hired, and he was going to jump over the ocean where Larry McDonald went down and go without a parachute. And I knew immediately that something terrible had happened to him. I haven't known him very long. I just got to know him when the article on I wrote for the Korean Airline went down, when I had called him and said, I'd like to do a story on Larry McDonald, and I feel that he was responsible with a group of people in Georgia for shooting you, and now they're trying to make a martyr out of him. I would want to tell the real story about Larry McDonald. So he got in touch with me, and he was calling several times a day, and he was so excited. He said, I'll give you a magazine, I'll give you The Rebel, and you can have your own magazine, and we'll get this out. And in about 10 days, the Hustler magazine will come out with the story of Larry McDonald called Murder Incorporated, and it's got the whole story in there that I wrote. It has his name on it. He asked if he could use his name, but you people know Mae Brussel, and I've told you I did it, and he won't care. Okay, so he calls me, the sky is falling, I'm going to Colorado, here's my phone number, they're going to drop a neutron bomb in Los Angeles, and so I got to get out of here, call me in Colorado, if Reagan's killed, they're going to kill him in Korea. And I knew then that he was out of his mind, he never talked like this, and this was so silly. I said, look, you're talking like Jim Jones, somebody has your head, somebody's dropped something to you, and I didn't know who was there at the house, I didn't know what was going on. Then I get a phone call a few days later from a Mr. Barron, the attorney for Marvin Pancos. Pancos is the man charged with killing Vicki Morgan. And he said, you know who has moved into Larry Flint's home? And I'll tell you who it is, and if you don't know the name, I'll read you some sections from a book describing these characters. One is Mitchell Werbel of the Central Intelligence Agency. He's a white czarist, white Russian czarist, who's been responsible for every silencer and every military coup that came down in the United States and had a role in every single one of them. And here is Larry Flint publishing an article on the Nazis and the Kennedy assassination, all new material, and you better run out and get them because they'll be rare. Get your hands on some. But here he's publishing this, and he's writing the real story of Larry McDonald and McDonald's work with Pinochet. And there were a lot of things that happened, and I listed them, that moved very swiftly. He had asked, he had the tapes, the Vicki Morgan tapes, the famous ones that were supposed to be of the president, and blackmail the president. And he said 2 weeks ago, what should I do? And I said, I would give them back because they'll kill you if you don't, but sell them back. You paid $25 million, just get your money back. I'll take $1 million and build a research center, and we'll go that way. He says, okay. In the meanwhile, Gordon Novell and Mitchell Werbel moved into his home. Here's a man who has $500,000 a year of security at the minimum, walkie-talkies, guards, telephone outside the gate, every kind of security. And into his house walks Mr. CIA, probably with more Nazi than George Bush ever had. He does all the dirty work for Bush. This man knows every intelligence operation going on in the world today. He is Mr. World. He trains down in Georgia, the paramilitary group, and in Texas, and works with, as I say, with the silencers. I always wondered, did he provide the silencer for Dealey Plaza and the Umbrella Man? Bob Cutler wrote a book that he thought Gordon Novell was the Umbrella Man, and Jim Garrison wanted him to testify before the grand jury when he arrested Clay Shaw, and Gordon Novell left there, and Richard Nixon called him in his electrician to wipe out the White House tapes. Everything I'm saying about the men is in public domain. It's in published books, so I'm not talking against them. I'm just telling you who the house guests are. So Larry Flint sent out letters to various people that he knows, and this is dated November the 16th, and it seems that they've talked him into killing himself. They're not going to kill him. He's going to kill himself. And this only happened very quickly in the last 10 days. The following telegram was sent to the ambassador of the Soviet embassy in Washington. On Wednesday, November 23rd, I intend to fly over Seoul, Korea, via the same route as Korean Airline Flight 007. I intend to jump out without a parachute at the same location where McDonald went down. I must do this to save the world. Kissinger is in complete control. He has gone mad and must be stopped. Bush and Kissinger plan to assassinate Reagan. CIA killed Jessica Savage and Bishop in Grenada. Agency had 5-day warning about the incident in Lebanon. World War III is imminent. If Korea will not waive visa requirements, I will request Soviet Union to allow my pilot to land in Russia. The type of aircraft I will be flying is a 727. Please advise me as soon as possible. Larry Flint. Then he puts his address and his telephone number. If any of you want to call there tonight, 213-471-3441. Call down there. Someone will answer. He's supposed to be going to Dallas tonight to duplicate the motorcade. Tell him, please don't do this. Don't die for nothing. This is like Dr. Olson, Mr. Olson, who was at a CIA compound and was visiting members of the CIA, and they slipped some tasteless substance into his food, and he calls his wife, I won't be home for Thanksgiving or some nearby occasion. I'm going to New York for the weekend. And she thought it was on business, and he went flying out of a 20-story building. And 20 years later, the CIA admitted that they gave him something that had him jumping out of a building. Now, I said to Larry Flynt, don't do this. This is the time where information is power. Now you have the rebel. You have things happening that are real. But he's between a rock and a hard place. They moved into the house. They're there now. He called me last Monday. I said, is Gordon Novell in the room? He said, yeah. I said, I can't talk if Gordon Novell's in the room. I talked to him today. I said, look, I'll go to L.A. tomorrow, and I'll have you put in a mental hospital. Nobody should fly you or take you out of this place. Mental places are for those who are not in control of their own lives. He's been acting silly, discredited, because he's publishing some of the most important material that has ever been published in this country. So now Mitchell Revell went to court with him last week when he had a flag draped around him like a diaper and acting silly. If you wondered what happened to him, this is a public display of what is going on. Now, before I knew they moved in the house, I didn't know who was there. I called Terry Moore because she watched the way Howard Hughes was kidnapped from 1957. And he was drugged by Bobby Hall and Jack Eggers, the Beverly Hills police. And every once in a while, they would let him appear in the lobby of the Beverly Hills Hotel so everyone would know that he was loony. Then when his friends wanted to see him, they'd say, can't talk to you, or if they'd call, they wouldn't let him talk to them. And he was totally isolated, and they thought it was his wishes. And Terry always regretted that she didn't interfere or try to help Howard in some way. Well, we make mistakes in the past, but we don't have to make them in the present. And hopefully we learn from these mistakes. So I asked Terry Moore to go over with me and see if we could talk to him. But then I didn't know that these people had moved in. What can you say? What can Mae Brussel say to Mitchell Revell and Gordon Novell after you've talked about them on the air for how many years? What can you say to these people? There was an article in the L.A. Herald about John Kennedy, and it was written by Joe Morgenstern. And the gist of the article, he said, if we must cry, let it be for today's tragedies, for what's happened since. And he goes into some of the things that have happened, and he says it's silly to spend more tears on the man. The trick is to bring our passions to bear on the present, to recapture some grasp of the future. The people running our country at the moment offer no future at all. They can't comprehend a cause for genuine hope when they find one, so they plump for things like nerve gas and spend pittances on things like fusion research, which offers few prospects in the future. They've lost touch with the aspirations of youth. They divert money from millions of children's education and nutrition to buy something that is redundant or useless weapons. And then in a masterstroke of hypocrisy, they go to court on behalf of a miserably handicapped and retarded infant who's got no chance of ever enjoying a full life. Maybe it's a good place to start for anyone who feels like crying. And that's the way I feel about this situation. This is not the time to talk about John Kennedy. It's the time to talk about now. Well, what was happening when Larry Flynt's house guests arrived and moved in? I looked over the two tapes that he sent to every member of Congress. After he met me, he was so enthusiastic. He spent $6,000 and sent broadcasts to every member of Congress. Remember, there's the Jesse Helms and the Strom Thurmonds and the Dentons and Jeremiah Dentons and the raw fascists all over the place, and a good hunk of them working with security and intelligence. And what tape did they receive? Remember that there were over 500 cassettes sent 2 weeks in a row, and one of the cassettes came back from William Proxmire, and the other, I got a very gracious letter from Congressman Panetta, who lives in our area, saying, if there's anything I can do to help you, at least he was a gentleman and acknowledged it, and the other 500 didn't. Larry spent $6,000. And in return, the thanks he got for his brand of patriotism was Gordon Novell and Mitchell Revell move into the house. Well, I looked up to see what they got that would anger them. You see, first of all, the DeLorean case wasn't that big. I think the government gave him the tapes for a pittance because they want it thrown out. They don't want DeLorean to go to court. So he's actually doing them a favor with the DeLorean story. The Vicky Morgan tapes are something else. If the president's embarrassed, then we get George Bush. And I always wondered if the tapes were available so that Ronald Reagan would be embarrassed and we would slide Reagan out just as they did with Richard Nixon and the tape, Scotch tape. And then George Bush of the CIA would be president of the United States. I wouldn't mess around with those movies anyway because they're none of my business. I think if people, you know, want their sex, they should have it. But anyway, he has them, and that's trouble. But what else did he do? He published the article on 007, and you'll see it, and he got out the issue on the rise of the Fourth Reich and the John Kennedy murder. And then he sent these tapes, and I looked to see what they got there. The tape is about Lieutenant General Graham, who is touring the country, pushing his high frontier weapons with his political action committee to get those space stations and genocidal slave labor camps going up there. And it printed the address of him with Dr. Fritz Kramer. Now, that's not a household word, that address, with a telephone number, 202-484-5033. So every member of Congress had Fritz Kramer and Daniel Graham's address on it. Then there was a section of that tape on the dead chief of the gold company, Alan Saxon. Those $60 million haven't been found with the gold bricks, and it mentions Johnny Carson and Henry Bushkin and Jack Catane and the mob in Beverly Hills. Well, Carson was part of Ronald Reagan's inauguration and a Mr. Republican, so I don't suppose Congress liked that. Then the tape asked the question, what was Larry McDonald doing in the Cayman Islands before the plane went down? Or Catherine McDonald and her role in being in touch with the National Security Council while the president was asleep, that she knew something nobody else knew, and her role being advised about the aeroplane, as I say, before the president knew. On the other side of broadcast 617, had to do with Roy Cohn and Larry McDonald and Western Goals, and Roy Cohn and General Daniel Graham. I don't suppose there could be a more important tape. I haven't looked at all the sheets, but this is a lot of information. When you tap Roy Cohn, you tap trouble. I mean, people said don't send out things about Roy Cohn, and he's the common denominator between the space stations, the Vatican, and the Mafia, and the hit teams, and Roy Cohn is on the board of Western Goals, Birch Society, and the military, and the combined forces, the radical right. So that broadcast 617 is one of the things, looking for a reason for this drastic move, because when the top boys move in, you may as well just kidnap him and take him away. Then the next broadcast he sent them was number 618, and this was about 20th Century Fox and Mark Rich. Well, he's a partner, has 50% of 20th Century Fox, which is Henry Kissinger and Marvin Davis, and it has to do with Cardinal Cody and Cardinal Cook, and Senator Alphonse D'Amato of New York with his propaganda against the Soviet Union. And D'Amato is one of the advisors and spoke at the graduation of that school, St. George's University, the medical school down in Granada, has links to that school. When I did that broadcast, I didn't know his links to Granada and the government down there. And also is about Tom Pappas and the paying of the election of Spiro Agnew and Pappas and Nixon, how the CIA recycled money to buy off that 1968 and 72 election, and the role of the Los Angeles Police Department with John Belushi, and the combination of W.R. Grace and Hughes Tool Company, and Evel Younger coming out of the woodwork with his new laws. I suppose I look at the sheet that goes out with the broadcast every week. If you subscribe to the tapes, you get the sheet. If you don't, you send self-addressed stamped envelopes, and I send you a bibliography if you want it. And I go down the line and I say, oh my gosh, did I say all that? I mean, no wonder they're after poor Larry Flynt. He sends out these tapes to every member of Congress. And I have had a terrible week because a deadline was due for the next Rebel. The Realist was a long time ago. I'm meeting a deadline for one magazine and I'm wondering, is he going to be alive another day? And how is he living in terror? And how do you extricate yourself from this and feeling that in a sense, I played a role. And in a sense, he picked up the ball and went for it and courageously wanted to tell the people what happened. And now he's in a castle in Bel Air and he's paying his dues. And this is the American tragedy. It's 8:30. Now we're going to take a 1 minute break and then come back to the second half of broadcast 624. And when we take this break, I always ask for money to the station. I haven't asked if you're sending it in. I don't know. I assume you are. I'm sure it's coming in. We're still on the air. The winter comes and those rainstorms are terrible and the towers go down. So if you can subscribe, be a member to Kazoo and send in something and say, hey, you know, there aren't many ways to get information out anymore. You understand that? And here is somebody like Larry Flint, whose life is on the line. And I've had 13 years on the air. It's very important to appreciate your freedom when you have it. Do you appreciate it? Because you lose first the publishers and then eventually, you know, they take away the means of communication. And that's very important. It has to be, information has to be disseminated, and the system knows how to take away the means of communication.